It's a beautiful thing indeed. So it's no secret you guys are big-time Beatle fans, and not just fans, but aficionados. You're Garden State Liverpudlian aficionados. You love the Beatles so much, you actually recorded two albums of Beatle tunes. Tell us about those records, Pat.
Well, I was personally looking for something to reintroduce the world at large, all the Smithereens friends and supporters who had given us a career and a life worth living. We needed something in the wake of grunge, which had made us temporarily obsolete, to reintroduce the band. So I came across a magazine called American Heritage, and the topic was 1964, the year everything changed. It talked about the Vietnam War, the Kennedy assassination, Lyndon Johnson's Great Society, but mostly it talked about Beatlemania. And I called a friend of mine who ran the record label, and I said, I have an offer that you can't refuse. I'm going to make you an offer. And he says, what is it? I said, the Smithereens versus the Beatles, like the Dave Clark Five versus the Beatles.
Sure, Four Seasons.
But the Dave Clark Five, too.
Oh, they did that one.
The magazine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So anyway, without hesitation, he said, I love it. Let's do it. And that was it. And I don't know that you guys reacted quite as enthusiastically. It was a daunting task. Originally, we were going to do a bunch of songs, right?
Right.
Various songs, our favorites. And then I came across the idea, let's recreate the entire very, very important first American release, at least for me, Meet the Beatles.
That right.
Was, and I think we agreed as a group that that album in particular was the most influential album on the career of the Smithereens.
Yeah, and it was out of print at the time, right?
Yeah.
Capitol. On CD, you mean?
Yeah. Now, Dennis, you have a theory about the original Meet the Beatles album, why it was so good, right? Weren't they in the midst of touring?
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess going back to the sessions for With the Beatles, I always thought that that was the quintessential Beatles record because they were in the throes of, you know, European Beatlemania at the time, and they were working so much. Ringo was still fairly new to the band, but they were working so much, and they were feeding off their own success. And if you look at the Beatles sessions book, they were cutting tracks in the afternoon and then jumping in the van and going to a gig at night. So they were really working all the time. They were fired up as a band. And I think it's Ringo's best drum performances on that record.
Interesting.
Really swinging and hitting it real hard.
So what happened, Chris, is that the public found out about it. It put us on the front cover of the New York Times Sunday magazine. And the rest, I guess, is history. I mean, it did very well for us, and it has enabled us to continue to record. I think we put out 9 albums in the past 7 years or something.
Right, and before that, people thought, you know, we broke up or got back together, and we're like, no, we've always been together, but that album brought it back.
It put you back on the map a bit. And you guys did a B-side record as well, right?
Yeah.
Well, they wanted another one because the first one did so well. And we all, you know, within the band and certainly all of our friends and our Beatles circle of friends and you as well, realized that the Beatles' B-sides were better than most bands' A-sides.
Absolutely.
Stuff like There's a Place. What else, Dan?
Oh, gee whiz. Look, I saw her standing there, you know, as a B-side. They're really double A-sides, in a way, yeah.
So did any of you, you're a couple of years older than I am. I know it's hard to believe. did any of you guys ever see the Beatles perform? No right?
No,
you were just a bit too young.
I was
right?
Saw them all individually, but never together.
How about the concert for Bangladesh?
I missed that.
We were just under that age.
You guys saw the one to one.
Jimmy and I went to the one to one show.
Yeah. Oh, you did
the daytime show because the nighttime show was sold out, but.
And man, you can get tickets that day. It wasn't
for John Lennon.
Yeah.
Well,
the closest that I got to it is that I was friendly with Julian for a long time, and we wrote a song together that appeared on our fourth Capitol record, Blow Up, a song called If You Want the Sun to Shine. And then I got invited to a Buddy Holly event in New York City hosted by McCartney when the Buddy Holly musical was debuting, and Maria Elena had become friendly with us, Buddy Holly's widow.
Yeah.
And we wrote a song called Maria Elena. So I walked in, and Paul and Linda knew who the Smithereens are, and she said, Linda, who was from, where's she from in Long Island?
She's up in Syracuse somewhere,
Well, she's from Long Island, and she said in a very pronounced British accent, she says, we've seen you on the telly. We love your music, okay? And, I mean, she kissed me on the cheek, Linda McCartney and Paul said, I heard you just got married. He goes, congratulations. It's like, how the hell they know, you know?
Now, would you have wished Paul kissed you on the cheek deep down inside as a Beatle fan?
No, no, not that. I don't go that far.
Just
but you
checking.
Know what? Here was the greatest miracle of all for us. We worked for so long, and all we ever wanted was to put an album out, and we got signed to Capitol Records, our favorite label, which is the label of the Beach Boys, Frank Sinatra, Stan Kenton.
Lou Rawls.
Curtis Knight. And
the Raspberries.
Yeah.
But they weren't doing the Color Wheel label at that time.
Right.
Now, you couldn't ask for that. You couldn't.
We did, right?
We got it. That's what I was going to say. You
and
have
the
to demand that rainbow.
But now, in retrospect, and I brought this up, we forgot something, Chris. The singles that we put out, like Only in Memory and Girl Like You and stuff like that, the 45s, we just forgot because we were touring all the time. We should have got that orange label.
Yeah. Beastie Boys did that.
Yeah, you get the swirl. Yeah.
Yeah, and the Knack did that, actually, too.
So for us, for us to be on the same label as the Beatles was and is mind-blowing.
Speaking of, you know, records and buying records, do you remember the first purchase of a Beatles record? Let me go around real quick. Remember your first one you bought?
There was a kid sitting behind me who said, oh, my sister has Beatle records. Oh, how much does she want? You know, I'll probably give it to you for 75 cents. Turned out to be Cry for a Shadow with the picture sleeve.
Nice.
Yeah.
For 75
yeah, that
cents.
Was my, yeah.
You still have it?
No. I don't know what happened to it.
Hey, Dennis, do you remember buying your first Beatles record?
Well, I went to the store with my mom, record store in Passaic, New Jersey, and I really wanted to get Forget Him by Bobby Rydell, which was a big favorite of mine in late 63, early 64. And I'd heard the Beatles, and I Want to Hold Your Hand was on the radio, and I was crazy for it, and never seen a picture of them at that point. Went to the record store. Back then, they would hang up the 45s in the door, like the top 20.
Right.
And that was the first moment I saw a picture of the Beatles on the picture sleeve of Want to Hold Your Hand. I ended up getting Forget Him that day. But a couple weeks
Pasadena on the Beatles.
A couple weeks later. Well, they can only afford one single. And then we got Want to Hold Your Hand a couple weeks later.
I think I was on Christmas vacation in 1963 and was up early in the morning and brushing my teeth and had my constant companion, my red transistor radio. And Herb Oscar Anderson, who was a very important DJ in my life on WABC in New York, he said he made fun of the fact that he was going to play a song by a group from England for the first time. He goes, they're called the Beatles, right? And I heard I Want to Hold Your Hand, and I dropped the toothbrush, and I badgered my father that day. We drove through a snowstorm in New Jersey, and I bought I Want to Hold Your Hand with the picture sleeve. And I looked at it, and I was in shock because it's like the ugliest photograph of him ever. And Paul's got a cigarette in his hand.
Not anymore.
No, I know.
They are brushing it out.
You know, I mean, everybody smoked cigarettes back then, but you didn't. When you were selling to kids,
sure,
you didn't show anyone with a cigarette, and it was shocking to see. You know?
Right on the cover like that.
But I was hooked instantly. And then after a while, I started listening to the B-side, and I thought it was better than I Want to Hold Your Hand, but I've changed my opinion since then.
Over the years. Yeah. Now, the cliche question, do any of you see the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show, or you're too small?
Yeah.
You did.
Totally.
You were six, right?
All of us.
All of you.
Yeah. Absolutely. Remember it well.
How about the Monkees? Do you remember when the Monkees first came on TV? Did that affect you in any way?
I love the Monkees.
Yeah, I did too. And the argument with the kids in school was, who's better, the Beatles or Monkees? I'm like, are you kidding?
You would say the Kinks and the Who, you two guys.
Well, you know, I dug the Monkees so much, and I used to read 16 magazine, you know, and I sent away for one of those double-breasted Monkees cavalry shirts.
Yeah.
From the store that they would get their clothes made in Hollywood, and I have it somewhere in the attic. I've got a Monkees shirt.
You know, I used to get 16 magazine too, and I thought that was kind of weird because I knew it was for girls, really. But I used to get it.
Yeah, sure.
Paul Revere and the Raiders and the Birds.
Oh no, they had all the groups we liked down there.
Right. You
know.
You didn't have. That's where I saw the pictures of them and read, you know, whatever articles.
And
about
Chris, them. My mother reminded me of something recently. She goes, "Do you still have your Monkees boots?"
Tom McCann made Monkees boots.
Yeah, my mother bought me a pair of Monkees boots, and I guess they got thrown out.
Yeah, they had the red on the inside. They had the Monkees logo. They were very similar to the Beatle boots, only.
But see, it was like seeing Hard Day's Night and Help every week in your home, you know, and everyone wanted to be a Monkee too, because, you know, you're living together with your pals and you're playing rock and roll and you're meeting girls and cool.
Well, that's why I asked about the Monkees, because I'm, like I said, a few years younger, and that they were my Beatles, because I was four when they were on the Ed Sullivan Show. I was already in bed, and so it didn't affect me.
Chris, you're a Beatles authority. Wasn't there some sort of friendship or respect between the Monkees and the Beatles?
Oh, absolutely. John loved them. John thought they were like the Marx Brothers, you know? They were doing their shtick only, you know, with an American slant, and of course, everyone from England, the way we love England, they love America.
Yeah.
So to the Beatles, you know, they weren't threatened at all by the Monkees. You know, they just thought they were.
Isn't there footage where you see them?
Yeah,
there's at least a still of Mickey in the studio sitting with Paul.
And Peter Tork plays on Wonderwall music.
Oh, does he?
He plays banjo on it.
Is he credited on
the album? He's on now. He is.
Now he is.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh. But George doesn't play a note on Wonderwall. It's all these other folks. We are hanging with the Smithereens. They are playing at the Coach House tonight in San Juan Capistrano. And they have picked a few of their favorite Beatles songs for us. We were just talking about the rock band mixes of some songs. And a lot of them are just, they put fake beginnings and endings on them so you can finish and end the song properly while you're playing the game. But some songs, they had to, you know, pull the original masters up with Giles Martin. And some things are really interesting. And one of them we were talking about was While My Guitar Gently Weeps. Now, our listeners hear it ad nauseum here because we play it all the time, but you guys haven't, so we're going to play it for you now. And Eric Clapton's solo, which he kind of wanted to make more Beatly, you know, he said after he finished it wasn't Beatly enough, so they put all this flange and phasing on it. This version, for some odd reason, has none of that. It's the straight Clapton solo, and it goes for about, I don't know, 40 seconds longer than the one we've known and loved all these years. So let's spin it now, Mark. There's even counting in the beginning.
Yes. One, two, three,
four. 95.5 KLOS, Breakfast with the Beatles, a little longer version of While My Guitar Gently
Weeps. You know what I get
that
from
that? That was cool,
that?
Man.
What do you get from that,
hearing
Beatle Pat?
Even the stuff that they're improvising vocally at the end of it, such imagination and genius, you know? And it could have gone either way. The mix could have been different. The mono mixes are certainly different than the stereo mixes on the White Album. But it's really remarkable because... Well, even with the anthology, you know, the Beatles anthology, they always chose the right version to release in the end. You know,
that's
what
a
mean?
Very good point. You know, they always ask George Martin, you know, what do you got still in the vaults that we haven't heard? And George Martin said, it's all, you heard all the best stuff. You know, we knew what we were doing. There's not some gem sitting in the vault somewhere
just
that we just
takes.
Decided not to, you know,
and
let it, you hear.
You know, even the way you see the evolution of the song, Yes It Is, you know, the way it was originally conceived. How they came up with the final version, it's perfect. It's perfect, you know, and they worked toward that. And
now, Pat, do you think that had a lot to do with George Martin being there?
Absolutely, sure.
Yeah.
I mean...
More so in the earlier days. Than the end, of course, when George wasn't quite around as much, right?
Well,
we're hanging with the Smithereens. I'm sorry, Pat.
What do I know about it? I prefer the Phil Spector version of Let It Be to the naked version.
Well, it's because you grew up with it.
Right.
The same with me.
And when Let It Be came out, everybody forgets how many hits were on that album. You had Let It Be, Long and Winding Road.
I think it's their third biggest selling album.
Is it really?
I think it's the White Album, Abbey Road, Let It Be, and then like Sgt. Pepper.
No, but what was great?
It's always voted like third or second.
What was great is that you heard them goofing around and talking.
Yeah.
There was the whole rooftop thing in the movie. It's an entity unto itself, like the White Album is. Every phase of their career. You know, I mean,
because back then I didn't really hear their speaking voices that often. It wasn't like now, you know, you hear everything.
And it was reflective of the times. And here's an observation I've made, and I've told Dennis, a lot of people don't see it this way. I think that the summer before they cut that, didn't George and Clapton go up and visit the band at Big Pink?
Yeah,
they were hanging around.
George was definitely...
You hear them talking on the Fly on the Wall disc. That's the first thing you hear is George coming in, I guess right after the Christmas holiday, saying, talking about hanging with the band.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he says to Ringo, you would like these guys, right? And you know, he says, they like your song, I think, on the Let It Be Naked disc, you know, where they're speaking. I think, yeah, they really like your song, Ringo, Richie or Ringo. Yeah.
And if you look at Paul in that phase, Let It Be...
Total Garth Hudson.
Garth Hudson.
Looked
the
like
hair slicked back, the beard.
Isn't it funny that how George Harrison ended up being the Beatle that hung with the heavies? You know, he was hanging with Clapton, and then he was hanging with Dylan. You know, Paul and John, they were the Dylan guys.
Well, Chris,
they were into, and then it was George who ends up being the Bud, you know?
Yeah, I figured it out. You know why George discovered the sitar and the Maharishi and all that stuff hanging out? Because John and Paul were too busy writing the songs for the album. So George
had that free time on his hands.
Yeah, he had to find something to occupy his time, and then he consequently brought it back into the group.
Good observation.
That's your theory, huh?
What?
That's your theory?
I know I'm right, too. I know I'm right.
We're going to take a quick break because we have to pay some bills. We're hanging with the Smithereens. Hey, maybe they'll take a phone call. Something you want to ask them? 800-955-KLOS. Mark's going, oh no, the phone's not working. We'll be right back. 95.5 KLOS Breakfast with the Beatles. That was the Smithereens doing George Harrison's Don't Bother Me, sung by Beatle Jim. Nice job there, Jim.
Thank you.
So the guys are strapping on their guitars. Everybody is moved away from their microphones, except for Pat. Pat, you can still talk to us, right?
Yeah, I can.
So you're playing the Coach House tonight, huh?
Coach House in San Juan Capistrano, a place that's very much like home. Away from home for us. We've been playing there since 1986. We certainly would like to see all of our friends tonight, and most of them, I think, have already bought tickets. But, you know, these are places in the heart, and we always want to go back to the Coach House.
Yeah, what's great is they always give you a nice dinner at the Coach House.
They
bring you a dinner, or you can go out. They send you somewhere
Chris,
around.
We're not there to eat. We're there to bring.
Come on,
music.
Pat. Don't lie to everybody. You go to the Coach House for the free dinners, and I know it's a fact. So you guys ready to perform for millions and millions of people?
Okay,
you shouldn't have said that.
Chris, I'll preface this by telling just a brief story about when I first heard this song. I graduated fifth grade. It was the last day of school in 1965, and I was free as a bird, to quote the late John Lennon. And I was running down the driveway of School One in Scotch Plains, New Jersey, with my friends, the gang, the Front Street Gang, and all of a sudden, I see at the end of the driveway my mother waiting for me in the
How
car.
How cool.
You know? And she goes, get in the car. And I'm mortified. My friends are going, they're laughing at me. And she goes, come on, we're going to see the new Beatles movie.
Ah.
And it was Help. And we sat through it twice. Later on, I learned that the air conditioner had died in the house and that we only went to the movies because it was...
That was the excuse.
Healthfully air conditioned. So
but
anyway,
how cool was your mom, though,
yeah,
to pick
great.
That movie? You could have seen any movie in 1965.
And I loved all the songs, but this one in particular because it was set in the Beatles' cool path with John in the pit and the gardener playing tambourine. We're going to do our version of Hide Your Love Away.
No. Let me correct you. Is this mic on? Let me correct you, Pat. The gardener... played the recorder. Ringo, in fact,
oh,
the tambourine.
Okay.
Yeah.
I stand corrected.
Dennis Dagen, ladies and gentlemen. Fact checker.
Here we go. Here I stand, head in hand, turn my face to the wall. If she's gone, I can't go on feeling 2 foot small. Everywhere people stare, each and every day. I can see them laugh at me, and I hear them say, everybody in the room, ready? Hey! You've got to hide your love away. Hey! You've got to hide your love away. How can I even try? I can never win. Fearing them, fearing them, in the state I'm in. How could she say to me, love will find a way? Gather round all you clowns, let me
hear you say,
hey,
you got to hide your love away. Got to hide your lovely way.
Smithereens, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, cats and kittens. Not bad for a Sunday morning, guys.
At this really? Hour?
Really? Pat, nice job. Have a sip of water. Speaking of water, you know, Paul McCartney's been doing like 2.5 hour, almost 3 hour concerts, right? And we've had his band members in here, Brian and Rusty. And one thing I notice when I go see Paul McCartney play, that he never takes a sip of water.
Really?
The entire concert, right? I thought, man, I just missed it. He must be, right?
Because he's old school and that's unprofessional. You don't drink water on stage.
That might be it, because then I started making a conscious effort to watch this, right? And I've seen him 3 or 4 times, right? Never has a sip of water. So I asked his band members, hey, you know, does Paul, is this me? And just, no, he never drinks water, they say. This is again, Pat, because he's a professional.
Yeah.
He doesn't sweat either live. The guys go, we get off stage and Abe, the drummer's like dripping, and we look over at Paul and he's got little perspiration under his arms. No, but he doesn't sweat, he doesn't drink water.
I'm going to tell you something. I saw Wings back in 77 or so, right?
Six.
And I think he was at the top of his game. You know, he was really great. And I've noticed he does these amazing bass lines and performs, but it's effortless. And he doesn't move much, but he doesn't have to. And you can really see what he's doing with the fretwork, you know, with his bass playing, because you've got these enormous screens now, and they've turned places like the old Shea Stadium, Citi Field, and Yankee Stadium now into smaller places, because you could really see what they're
doing. Right, because his hand is 12 feet tall up on the screen.
And he's, very, very little energy, but a lot expanded at the same time, so...
You guys want to take a phone call?
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
Just take one. You know, let's blindly go to pick line 2, Mark. Let's see what happens. Hey, caller, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
You have a question for the Smithereens?
Yes, I did.
All right.
I was wondering when Keith and Nick, according to Keith's book, kind of split up, both of their solo careers were dismal. And I remember John Lennon saying on the Cabot Show that the Beatles didn't really break up. If you want to hear us, just buy the 4 solo albums and play them together and you'll have the same thing. So I'm asking you, in retrospect, are we better off that they had solo careers and put out so much more product than if they had stayed together?
This is Pat first, and I think Dennis will have something to say. I think that the Beatles were meant to exist for how many years then?
Eight years? Yeah, I guess 8 years.
And how many songs? 120, something like that? I don't know. I certainly... didn't enjoy the solo work as much as the Beatles, although, you know, that's
just
me.
There were moments,
but there's nothing like the Beatles.
They were meant to. They ran their course. I just think is the natural thing that happened with their lives, their personalities, their creative juices together. It was just meant to go that long. And yeah, I think John's point is well taken. You probably can put together a 12 or 14 track collection of solo work, and you'll have, you know, something that resembles, I guess, the spirit of the White Album, because a lot of that was cut individually. But it's not the same, magic that they created together, you know. So
yeah, magic's a good word. Yeah.
There you go. How's that answer? Good?
Wonderful.
All right. What's your name, by the way?
Mickey.
All right, Mickey.
From Harvard City.
Thanks for listening.
See you, Mickey.
Say hi to Peter and
Peter and
Mike.
The other monkeys. So you guys were doing some dates with Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, eh?
Yes, we did. We did a tour with them. We covered the Midwest and Canada, and boy, it was great. You never know how the audiences are going to react to an opening act, but man, they were with us on their feet at the end of our sets. It was very exciting.
Engineer Mark here works with Tom Petty on his radio show.
Oh, cool.
Week. And yeah, It's a great little tour.
That doesn't make you any better than we are. I don't want to hear this.
You know, it's funny, at every show.
The minute we walked in, he said, you know, I work with Tom Petty, man. It's like, hey, it's, you know, come on, go ahead.
No, my moment has passed.
All things must pass. Yeah.
Tomorrow never knows.
Oh, God.
You guys, I asked some of your favorite Beatles songs, and I believe Jim and Pat mentioned Tomorrow Never Knows, which we're going to play for you right now. Why do you guys want to hear that? And tell me about that.
You know
song.
What? I don't know what you've got queued up, but do you have like the alternate mix where the tapes are
I do.
Different?
I have the first mono mix that only appeared on the UK version of Revolver on its first pressing. So yeah, I do
it's
have
different
that
than
one.
The American okay. mono one?
Absolutely.
Okay. Really?
You know,
here, yeah, well, here,
only
here,
on the UK first pressing.
We're talking about the Beatles coming out with I Want to Hold Your Hand in December of 1963. Now, when is Revolver released?
August 66.
You're going from This Boy to Tomorrow Never Knows in 2 years. Yeah. That's what's staggering, you know what I mean? And that's why this song is so important.
And the thing is, to a lot of young listeners, and maybe even for yourself, Chris, if you weren't there for that first couple years, you know, on the Beatles track, When you would bring these records home for the first time and listen to them, it's easy now to look at it. Not easy, it's unfortunate because it's all part of the wallpaper now, this music, you know. And back then, it didn't exist before you brought it home and put it on your turntable. When you brought these records home, it was something starkly new and exciting and the likes of which you never heard before. It was life-changing to put this track on in particular after hearing all the other songs on Revolver. When this came on and when John's voice changes after the break and with the phasing or whatever they did to it, it was completely life-changing and mind-blowing the first time you heard it. You
know? And it's interesting because it was the first song recorded for this
That's
record.
Right, yeah.
So showing you where their heads were at.
You know, so I was watching the last episode of Mad Men where Don Draper puts the revolver on.
Right.
And my family gets irritated with me sometimes because he puts the needle right in the beginning and that comes on. We're like, no, that's the last song.
We all did that.
Tramps like us would notice that kind
But at
of
least
stuff.
They got the label right on that.
That was
one.
Nice of them, right?
Cool.
From your Revolver collection right here on Breakfast with the Beatles. Tomorrow Never Knows as we hang with the Smithereens. Hey, want to take another phone call?
Certainly.
Engineer Mark says this is a good question online too. We'll be the judge of that. Good morning, listener. Is this Fred?
It is.
Beatle Fred, where are you calling us from?
I'm calling from Long Beach.
Long Beach. Say hi to the Smithereens.
Hi. Hey, Smithereens, I don't have a question, just a comment. And I know it's out of season, but I got to tell you, you guys put out the most rockin' Christmas album of all time.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
And I love the liner notes. I mean, I'm roughly your age, and the whole thing about the Grant's Christmas album and everything, I'm there, I get it. It's just a beautiful record. I mean, the covers, the originals, it's something that people should look for.
Wait a minute, this isn't Fred Lennon, is it?
Hey, there's a guy in his late 60s calling up.
That's very, very nice.
Giving you some compliments.
Thank you so much.
I was
Merry
a joke because he said he was the same age as you guys. Okay. What's that? Oh, we're going to do a quiz. We can't do a quiz without the proper quiz tones, Engineer Mark. 800-955-KLOS. There they are. Here's our number. Here's our question. Here we go. Okay.
Was that Clapton playing that?
Yes, that was Eric Clapton.
Probably Vinnie Bell or somebody.
All right, now, we usually don't give that much time to the U.S. Beatle albums because sometimes they're a bit ridiculous. And with that said, here's your quiz question. Name the only two U.S.-released Beatles albums that contain only two songs featuring John Lennon on lead vocals. Name the only two S. What kind of a word is that?
Well, I think we just heard one of them.
Oh, come on, guys, now.
Jolly what?
There's one of them?
Name the only two U.S.-released Beatles albums that contain only two songs featuring John Lennon on lead vocals. Stop guessing while we're playing the quiz.
I thought we were supposed to answer. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. You know what? We'll give the... you guys want to go see the Rascals at the Greek Theater?
Is that why you're...
That's why he's trying
cutting
to
cutting my neck.
You're quizzing us.
You idiot.
800-955-KLOS is our number. Are we breaking?
Yes.
Oh, man. We're going to break, come back with that answer, and hang more with the Smithereens right here on 95.5 KLOS.
Sorry.
95.5 KLOS. 8 days a week without the fade up, guys.
Yeah, man.
See, we're bringing out all
You see, that song reminds me of my dad. I heard it on the radio, or 65 Chevy Malibu, driving around with dad, and it reminds me of all those great TV shows like Shindig and Hullabaloo and the Addams Family and the Munsters and the Bond movies. It was a great time to be a kid.
Do you get MeTV, Pat? Do you have that new?
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's the only station we keep on at our house. We watch My Three Sons constantly. We had Barry Livingston here, Ernie, last couple of weeks. It was cool.
Yeah, Ernie's cool. He's one of my Facebook friends.
Yeah, he's a good guy. His son's got a band who's playing tonight here in Los Angeles. Little plug for the Livingstons. Mm-hmm. Hey, we had a quiz before, and I believe we still have a quiz winner hanging on the line. Winner, are you still there?
Yes, I am. Good morning. It's Ellington from Reseda.
Ellington. Beatle Ellington from Reseda. We asked the question, Ellington. Name the only two U.S.-released Beatles albums that contain only two songs featuring John Lennon on lead vocals. What albums would that be?
Those would be Yellow Submarine and Revolver.
Nice. Let's give them a round of applause. Hey, you're going to see the Rascals. Can you believe it? The Rascals.
Unbelievable. It's going to be fantastic.
It's a great little show called Once Upon a Dream, and it's kind of the history of the Rascals, and it's great. Congratulations. You've got good seats. All right. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
All right. We are hanging with the Smithereens, who are playing this evening at the Coach House in San Juan Capistrano. Go on down and see them. It's a great show. You going to play another song for us, guys?
Yeah, Dennis, you set this one up.
Well, I'm sure you often talk about the difference between the American and British Beatle albums. I'm sure ad nauseum, right?
Yes, we
but,
do.
You know, and you said before, sometimes they get a little weird, but I think it's everybody in the band shares the opinion that we do prefer the American Rubber Soul over the British one.
It's funny you say that, because I think that is the perfect Beatle album.
Yeah, and it's
the American Rubber Soul, perfect.
And I don't think Dave Dexter Jr., whoever sliced that one together, really knew that he was doing us a big favor by putting more of those acoustic driven
Well, they were
songs
thinking on. Folk, you know,
yeah.
They were trying to think
so
along the
were,
folk
yeah.
idea. But it is, isn't it a perfect,
yeah.
And that was the first album that I ever bought.
Right, and I dig the British one, but the American one has a special place in our hearts, and one of our favorite songs is a song that was on the British Help album. We're talking about It's Only Love.
And it kicks off the American Rubber Soul, right?
No, it's no. Side two.
Okay, here we go.
When I see you go by, my own body, my insides just fly. Butterfly, why am I so shy when I'm beside you? It's only love, and that is all. Why should I feel the way I do? It's only love, and that is all. But it's so hard loving you. Is it right that you and I should fight every night? Just the sight of you makes nighttime bright. Very bright, haven't I the right to make it up, girl? It's only love, and that is all. Why should I feel the way I do? It's only love, and that is all. But it's so hard loving you. Yes, it's so hard loving you. Loving you.
Smithereens, ladies and gentlemen, live on a Sunday morning right
Chris,
here on Breakfast.
It's really,
with
really
the
not
Beatles.
That bad. We're not that. We're trying. Remember how the Beatles say that when they're
Mock Shout
in Hard Day's Night.
We're trying.
What's the song they do, right? And the producer, not bad, boys. And Paul goes, well, we're trying. You know what I mean?
There you go.
Because Paul has no ego whatsoever.
Yeah. Mock Shout, Pat. Mock Shout.
That was good, Dan. Good vocal, Dan.
Thanks.
So where do you guys go after San Juan Capistrano?
Home, baby.
You going back to Jersey? Wait, everybody still live in New Jersey?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
That's right.
Who wants to know?
Who needs to know that?
Where are we going after that?
Speaking of Jersey, we were talking about the closing of Maxwell's the other night.
Yes, there is a famous place for all you Southern Californians in Hoboken, New Jersey, called Maxwell's, that started, what, in the early 80s?
I think late 70s, actually.
Yeah?
I think so, yeah. And they finally bit the dust, and one of the last shows was a great Beatle tribute band called Bambi Keno.
Oh, yeah, I'm supposed to ask you about Bambi Keno.
Yeah, I'm going to have them send you a copy of their record. They do all Reeper Bon Beatles music, nothing past the time they played Hamburg, and it's a great show. I mean, it's really
do they slick back their hair and do the whole thing, or
they wear the leather, but they don't slick back their
hair. Do they have a Tony Sheridan impersonator?
Occasionally. Well, actually, I sit in with them and sing sometimes. We did...
As Sheridan?
No, we did Fabulous by Charlie Gracie, and That's When Your Heartaches Begin, and stuff like that. But they have guest vocalists come up, but they're so much fun.
How could you not get to be a great band like the Beatles? How many sets a night? Hamburg, 8?
Yeah, something like that. If you see their show, what comes to mind is what a great bunch of songs the Beatles chose to play.
At that time,
it's a great show. You know, to hear all those early rock and roll tunes and some of those show tunes and with their early originals, it gives you a real insight as to what that vibe was like and what astute students they were of pop music.
I think that the Live at the BBC collection is really
exactly. Yeah,
it is great.
Essential.
It's fun to hear. It's fun to hear sometimes John singing a song that Ringo ended up singing.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, we got a young bunch of kids out here. I always get asked to introduce different Beatle tribute bands. And one night I never saw this band. They were playing in Santa Monica somewhere. I think they were called Britain's Finest. And I just figured they're going to be your typical Beatle tribute band. But like Bambi Keno, these guys were wearing leather jackets. They were all of like 18 years old. Mm-hmm. And, they had their hair slicked back and they did the Hamburg set. And it was a great way to open the show instead of the, Love Me Do with the suits like most of these tribute bands. It was a great idea. Mm-hmm. So I got something special here for you guys since you're from New Jersey. I don't know if you know, today is Ringo's former wife, Maureen's birthday. Maureen Tigret Cox Starkey, we knew her as Mo, born in Liverpool, married Ringo while hanging at the Cavern Club watching the band. But the story goes that Maureen was more of a Frank Sinatra fan than she was a Beatles fan. So Peter Brown, at the time, worked for the Beatles, got a hold of Sinatra and said, hey, Ringo's wife is this big time fan of yours. Her birthday's coming around, and it would be great if you cut a track for her. So The Lady is a Tramp, that song, right? He changes all the words around, him and his songwriter, at like 3 a.m. at Capitol Studios, and Sinatra cuts this song just for Maureen's birthday.
Wow.
And at the time, this is, summer of 1968, Apple Records is starting, right? So they printed up an acetate, and it was Apple One. If you notice, the UK Apple record started too. This was the first thing. It was Frank Sinatra doing this song to Maureen, and of course it disappeared over the years. But we have a copy of it, and it's a bit scratchy, and it's from an acetate. But since you're from New Jersey, and Frank is from New Jersey, and today, that's right, and today is Maureen's birthday, I thought we would play it. Now again, it's a bit scratchy. And you know what? Since these guys are here, Mark, can we precede it with a little Silvio Dante? I know we played it last week, but they're from New Jersey, so go.
Good morning, Mrs. Silvio Dante. I don't go for all this teenage rock and roll garbage. But this guy, Chris Carter, he's from New Jersey, so he's all right. But come on, Chris. Play something good from New Jersey. Frank Sinatra, something like that. Get off of this stupid Beatle kick, will you?
Oh, yeah.
Happy birthday, Mo, wherever you are. Francis Albert Sinatra.
Great.
The lady is a champ.
The greatest quote ever was when he would introduce something.
Yeah, the greatest Lennon McCartney song. One of the greatest love songs ever by Lennon McCartney. Who's going to argue with Frank? Yeah. Hey, guys, it's afternoon. I want to thank the Smithereens. Thank you guys for coming in.
All right.
Tonight, live at the Coach House in San Juan Capistrano. Engineer Mark, thank you for a wonderful job. Jackie DeShannon, thank you for this week in Beatles News. Luis, thank you. Happy birthday to Luis's mom, Jennifer. Happy birthday, Nick Celeste. Happy birthday, Seth Swirsky. My name is Chris Carter, and it's been a pleasure playing Beatles for you.